Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner, founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. You know why I do this, by the way? I do this because we as entrepreneurs are fighting against the odds to leave our marks on the world. We don't have the resources, we don't have the money, we don't have, in many cases, the experience of other people, but we're going to go out there and we're going to leave our marks on the world. And in order to do that, we got to learn to be scrappy. And that's what this interview is about, how to be a scrappy entrepreneur. My interview is with Mike Michalowicz. He's an entrepreneur himself and the author of this book, The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. There you go, closer to the camera. You're going to hear us in this program talk about how Mike moved his young family into a retirement community in order to save money. Interesting idea, right? Retirement communities, safe and cheaper than living in some other communities. You're also going to hear us talk about a prosperity plan. You're going to hear us talk about living up to your values. You're going to hear us talk about why it's better for failure to be more painful for you. And you're going to hear us talk about my favorite story in this whole interview. I'm not going to ruin it for you, but I want to make sure to give you a promo because you got to watch, you got to listen to this. You've got to listen to how he got on CNBC's Donnie Deutsch show. The way that he got Donnie Deutsch to even pay attention to him is the way that you're going to get bigger people in your industry, big entrepreneurs, big business people, the big shots, who everyone wants to get their attention, you're going to get their attention too. And the way that Mike got on his show is the way you're going to get to do business with them. Listen to the small distinction that he made that made a big difference in his connection to Donnie Deutsch. All right, two things you need to know before we get started. First of all, you got to know about Mike's website. It's called toiletpaperentrepreneur.com. Don't worry, he'll explain where the idea of Toilet Paper Entrepreneur comes from. And the second thing is, you should know that we interacted with people live using Twitter. We would talk, we would do this interview, and they would ask us questions on Twitter. And then somewhere at the end, you're going to see Twitter goes down and it's just Mike and I talking to each other without the audience participation. I didn't even know that Twitter went down until afterwards. All right, with all that introduction, here is my scrappy entrepreneur interview with Mike. All right, Mike, let's get right into it. I got the book right here, Toilet Paper Entrepreneur.
Awesome.
And I know what the Toilet Paper Entrepreneur means because I read the first few pages say it. I read the whole book, but you say it right away in the first few pages. For people who haven't read the book, can you tell them what it means to be a toilet paper entrepreneur?
Sure. It means you are a scrapper. And here's the analogy. Sometimes we get stuck. We've all been stuck in the bathroom with just three sheets. And I've yet to find a single human being that says, I give up, world's over, I'm going to sit here for the rest of my life. But the irony is entrepreneurship's the same way. None of us, or very few of us at least, make it through with a full roll. Most of us have the proverbial three sheets. We don't have a full roll of cash for sure. We don't have a full Rolodex of contacts. We don't have all those resources that you read about in the newspapers and the magazines. We have our three sheets. But unfortunately, many wannabe entrepreneurs do give up then. And I'm saying, no, this is like the bathroom experience. In the bathroom, you were willing to dig through the garbage can. In entrepreneurship, you got to be willing to dig through the dumpster over cash and to use innovation over a list of contacts. And by combining invention, ingenuity, resourcefulness over all those other resources, you'll actually build a better, stronger company.
I see. And you've done that yourself. Can you talk about your history? Let me tell you. So on page... Where is this? On page 12 of the foreword, you talk about your past companies, but you didn't mention their names, so I wasn't able to Google your ass, as you say.
Well, you just type in Mike Michalowicz, and you'll find me. So just my quick history. But what I wanted to preface it with is this is the highlights that you hear from everybody, and they're true. Mine are true, but you rarely hear the backstory, the real story. So... I've grown three multimillion dollar companies. My first one was called Olmec Systems. It was a computer company, sold it privately. My second one was in computer crime investigation. We did the Enron trial. We did the biggest trial in U.S. history, which was Payne Weber, over 1,000 infected computers. We did murder cases, the biggest murder case in this country. I sold that company to a Fortune 500 in 2005, I think. I started my third company, which is Obsidian Launch. It was valued at $2.2 million pre-concept, which means I just showed up in a room and I was offered $2.2 million for my company. I didn't even know what the company was yet. So that's kind of my history. I've been on CNBC regularly. I just now am hosting my own reality show called Bailout, which we filmed a couple weeks ago. So that's my story. This is all true. But what I hope people think, Andrew, when they hear that, in the back of their heads, they're like, Oh, here comes another arrogant jerk. You know, this guy's clearly from New Jersey. Because a lot of entrepreneurs have these successes that we read about, but they seem unattainable. They seem unrealistic for us. But my real story is a lot different, and it's a lot more typical, and it's a way more toilet paper entrepreneur related. I scrapped a lot and continue to a lot. And I think if anyone wants to achieve the successes I have had or greater, and it's definitely doable, you have to come from this philosophy of being a scrapper, being a toilet paper entrepreneur.
All right. Perfect lead into my next set of questions, which is, how are you a scrapper? How did you do it?
Well, so I'll tell you my story. I didn't really realize I did it. It's kind of a lifestyle. And when I started my first company, it wasn't the start, like, you know, I'm like, oh, I was destined to be an entrepreneur and I'm going to go to venture capitalists and raise money. No, I actually went out for drinks. I was like one of those greasy computer guys you would see at CompUSA or something. And I was one of those guys. And one night I went out for drinks with a colleague I worked with, and we got, you know, tanked. I mean, we got boozed up big time. And in my drunken stupor, I said, F this, I'm done working for the man, I'm going to start my own company. So my entrepreneurial moment was in a drunken stupor. And what happened was, I started a business. I was already married at 24. I already had my first son when I was 21. And so I had a wife and a young three-year-old, and we had no savings, and I was starting a company. So my wife and I talked, and we said, what are we going to do? Where are we going to live with basically no income? Our parents would not let us back in the house. We moved to a retirement village, and that's where I lived when I was 24 with my young family, because it was safe and affordable. And when I was doing jobs, I would literally work 24 hours a day because I needed the effing money. And when I was doing overnight projects and stuff, there was no hotel rooms or stuff. I slept on conference tables. And fast forward to today, that discipline of being innovative and being a scrapper plays throughout now. You can't really see my furniture, but all this stuff, that head back there and this stuff, all my furniture is used and most of it's free. I put out an email request right before I started my third company just saying, hey, if anyone's moving or ditching furniture, just give me a heads up. Well, sure enough, a couple of my friends were moving or ditching furniture, and I got all this free stuff, which is more than usable. It's great, and it costs nothing. Scrapper mentality that gets you past and through the tough times when you're not burning through cash, you can sustain. And in times like these, that scrapper mentality has to be entrenched in you to succeed.
Mike, I've talked about the way that I've scrapped in the past on Mixergy.com, and I've talked about the ways that I've saved money. And I got responses from people who said, don't you ever want to enjoy life? Don't you ever just want to live a little bit and buy the right furniture and have clean stuff up on your wall, or things that nobody else has had up on their wall yet? What's your response to that?
Yeah, so it's live within your means, right? So I like to have all the new stuff. And I've done it there. I've been there. And a couple of things I've observed. First of all, and this isn't to get philosophical, but money does not buy happiness, but it does amplify it. So you have to come from a basis of where you're happy and confident and just enjoying life in general. And it doesn't matter how much money you have. I'll tell you, when I was in the retirement village, for 1 year straight, every day my lunch was peanut butter and jelly. That was and sometimes ramen, but peanut butter and jelly. I thought I was done in college, and no, I wasn't. And I was no less happy or more happy than I am today. But, you know, I didn't have anything. I had one beat-up minivan. But then, you know, as I sold my companies, I started to spend money. I like exotic cars. I bought a couple cars. I have one left right now, a Viper. And but it's always been within my means. The problem is, most people think that by buying new stuff and having this great stuff, you're getting happiness. And it really just becomes a quick drug. You're happy for a minute, but then when the debt comes in, when you can't afford it, the pressure on you, the pressure to support that becomes overwhelming, and it defeats all the happiness. So the lesson is, you know, live within your means.
Right, and you decided you were going to start your own company because you didn't want to work for the man, because working for the man is oppressive. And then you go and you live in a retirement village and you eat ramen and you're living on furniture, you're sleeping on somebody's desk. Is it that much better to be an entrepreneur if you have to scrap that much?
I think it is better to be a scrapper. Why? Because you learn the discipline. Let me give you an example, Andrew. With that first company, after about 3 years or 4 years, we're doing about $1 million in revenue. It took a little while, but we're doing over $1 million in revenue, and I won some awards, Young Entrepreneur Awards and stuff. The SBA gave me an award. Well, they had this big thing. There was like 600 or 700 people there. They give me an award, shake hands, smile. And this one bank came up to me and said, Mike, you know, we were so impressed. You're only 27 or 28 and so impressive what you've done. We'd like to give you $250,000 just because you're a great person. And just sign here on the dotted line, you'll have $250,000. So I was like, oh, cool, all right. So I got 250 grand. I had a personal guarantee, or PG, they call us. And what I did was, I didn't have much fiscal discipline at that time. And so with the money, I did what I think most people do. You buy stuff and do stuff emotionally and then try to fulfill it with logic. So I got a nice car, like a real high-end car, because to me, the logic then was, you know, if I have an impressive car, when I go on a sales appointment, people want to buy from me. I got, you know, the beautiful receptionist. I got all the employees around me, so I look busy. It was all filling my ego. That was the emotion. But the backfill was that the logic was that it would improve my sales, and people see it as me as prestigious, and they'd want to buy from me. 6 months, I almost went bankrupt after I had that money. And it's kind of like the lottery experience. You know, you pay. You have to learn before you can earn. And even if you get the money up front, like a lottery winner or like I did, you still will learn and have to earn that money, sometimes by losing it all and having to rebuild it back.
The SBA doesn't just hand out $250,000. Why they give you $250,000?
They used to, and they still do. Because, you know, the SBA, how it worked back then, and I'm sure it's still the same way, is they simply match up with a bank, and they guarantee the bank. So it's really finding a bank that's interested in you, and then the SBA comes in and says, we'll guarantee that loan. So if there's any problem, we'll give the money. So when you get an SBA loan, you're really getting a bank loan. So the thing is, you know, you better schmooze with a bank or two if you want the money. Now, for me, it was just winning this award, literally winning the award, when I had that money, the documents by the next morning. There was a sense of success. The thing was, it wasn't really deserving of it, but they felt that. So you have to go, I think, to banks and put on a presence that you will, and be confident in yourself that you'll succeed. And an SBA loan, at least back then, it's not that hard to secure. It's probably, I dare say, even easier now.
I see. I know that you can get a loan from a bank. I've gotten it myself to start up a business, but go figure that bankers are actually going to lend you money to start your business. And I know that the Small Business Administration takes a while to do it, but I think it was some like 3-4 months, maybe even as long as 6 months to get the money.
Oh, it could be. I don't know. I have a little saying I call bankers are anchors. Ultimately, I don't like to get involved in that because banks, most banks, not all banks, I like to work with the fringe banks, which are pretty cool. Not fringe in a bad sense, but they don't follow the traditional mindset. And the traditional mindset is, give me a business plan, which I think is a total freaking waste, but give me your business plan, all your projections, all stuff, and you play this game. And in most cases, if you play the game, you will get rejected by the bank. And the reason bankers are anchors is then you come back saying, oh my God, these banks didn't believe that my business would work. And then people get this mindset, my business isn't good enough, I can't get a loan, clearly I'm not good enough. If a bank won't fund you, you probably are good enough. Banks are designed risk. They have to get a return. So they make assessments on stuff they know, the stuff that they've expected and experienced in the past. They want to see if they can replicate it and have confidence it's going to work. But an entrepreneur is a risk taker. We have to invent and bring about new stuff. So if a bank is rejecting you, it's because you're not commonplace. If they're accepting you, you are commonplace, and you might be in danger of not being radically new. So if you get rejected by the bank, Andrew, that's a blessing because you're radically different. You're radically new.
All right. You talk in the book about, in Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, you talk about angels and venture capitalists and how you don't like them. Bank rejects you. Am I characterizing your opinion of them okay?
Yeah, I can't say I don't like them. I know some VCs and angels, and they're very good friends. I don't like the mindset that you traditionally hear. The mindset of VCs is they call it the 1 in 10. They make 10 investments. They expect one to pay back for all those 10 investments plus. They expect failure. It was funny. I was just up in Greenwich, Connecticut. This was a week or two ago for a radio interview with all these VCs. And they said, oh, Mike, you've invested in companies. What's your success ratio? I said, well, we're 1 in 6. We launched 6 in the beginning of this year, and 1 is tracking very well. The other 5 have failed. And they said, holy cow, that's awesome. I'm like, are you crazy? That sucks. Well, from a VC mentality, is you want big hits, quick get rich quickers. And from my mentality, you want get rich. We want people that are focused on come hell.
Sorry, it looks like we've got a bad connection here. Let's see.
The tenacity. One, I want to see everyone succeeding. And I think if you go into the VC mindset or even the angel mindset, they're expecting most people will fail and only a few will be the get-rich-quicks. And I think that's just the wrong mentality to have.
The company that you were talking about is Obsidian, right?
Yeah, my company is called Obsidian Launch, yeah.
And that's an incubator. You give young entrepreneurs office space. You give them some training. You give them a little bit of money.
Kind of. Yeah, it's a hybrid between an incubator and a VC. The best of the VC world is not actually money, it's the contacts. So if you line up the VC, they'll say they'll give you $10 million. Well, let me tell you a hidden secret. They don't give you $10 million. They will set aside $10 million and they'll give you tranches. They'll give you the first $100,000 to see how you do. And if it does well, then they'll invest in steps. So if you get an allotment of $10 million, you're not really getting that. But the other things VCs do, which is very important, is they make introductions. They generally invest in families. If you're in the tech industry, they'll invest in all these complementary businesses, and they'll have this little bit of inbreeding, businesses doing business with each other inside the portfolio and with friends they have. That is the way, that's the secret they use to grow businesses very quickly. It's not necessarily the money. So that's what we do too. We have family in, and we bring in other contacts to move people along quickly. The incubator model give space and so forth, which we do sometimes. But the real strength in the incubator model is they bring in industry experts that work hand in hand with the company, and that's what we do too. So we take the best of breed of VC and incubator and blend it into this new model.
And the one company that did do well, the 1 out of 6, is that Hedgehog Leather?
Hedgehog Leather Works. That company is rocking and rolling. They're changing the industry.
And I saw that you made a few references to it in the Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. But I also saw on the website that it launched in 2006. And that seems
right.
Like,
so yeah. Sorry.
It seems to predate the launch of Obsidian.
Yeah. So exactly. We rarely work with newbies. We did a little bit, and I found that was a mistake because we had some people going for a free ride, and they were just starting a company saying, hey, if Obsidian backs us, we can go. And we'd have to put all our blood and sweat into it. There's no irony that Hedgehog was successful because it already was established. It wasn't financially booming. It was already established. And the owner of that business, his name is Paul. Paul had committed to this as a full-time endeavor and was pushing along no matter what. We joined in, and now his business is tracking very well. But the foundation was an entrepreneur that was living their passion and focused on what they're doing. I would argue Paul would be successful no matter what. Obsidian's involvement, or he's successful more quickly now, but he'd be successful no matter what. And that's the type of people we're looking for. We're investing in entrepreneurs that are already established, already have committed their life to the growth of their business, and then they believe, and we feel, that by partnering, it's not 1 + 1 = 2, it's 1 + 1 = 10.
Okay, and you did talk, I keep going back to the book, Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. You talk about how entrepreneurs need to be following a passion. A lot of people think that entrepreneurs need to find a big market with an opportunity and jump on that. And you don't disagree with that, but you do say that passion is very important. Can you tell us why?
Yeah. Passion is the foundation. So, yeah, everyone else, you know, I have a great idea. It's a great market. It's a great opportunity. It's a great invention. These are all get rich quickers. These are people that say, well, I think I got something great. The market will want. I'm just going to do it and go for it. The reality is I've rarely seen a business take off explosively without tremendous effort and commitment behind it. And most businesses, I say 99%, all of my businesses went through a dip. So you start, you're excited, and then it goes down, and it takes a lot of effort, time, market doesn't know who you are, some pushback, and then it starts growing up again. So the only way you're going to get through that dip – that slow period is because you do what you love. The get rich quicker is the people that are doing it to make money quickly. When they go through that dip and they're not making money, they have that mentality, get rich quick. They jump onto the next scheme and they start jumping around. I'm not a big fan of pyramid schemes or equivalent, and because unfortunately they take advantage of people that are trying to get rich quick, and people will jump from networking, network marketing to network marketing because they're trying to make the quick buck. The thing is, the men and women that are doing what they love to do will stick it out, inevitably will stand out from everyone else, and will have the foundation for growth, long-term growth. And that's the people that I invest in, and those are the people that are the successful ones. Passion begets success.
Mike Makuta in the chat is asking for your URLs. Is it thetoiletpaperentrepreneur.com? That's where they can see your blog and find out about the book, right?
Yeah, toiletpaperentrepreneur.com. But I'll give you also a little quick thing there if you can't spell entrepreneur that easily. If you go to the TP guy, that's THETP as in toilet paper guy, that's me. People are calling me TP guy, so I just took the domain. That's a quick shortcut to get there. You definitely check it out. The blog, there's a new video going up early next week. There's constantly new content up there. There was an amazing post that went up today, too. It was 66 ways to get your focus back. So, yeah, just check this stuff out. It's cool. Plus, there's a free chapter. If you want to get the book, can I do a quick plug? If you want to get the book, you can get a free chapter there first, and you can pick it up on Amazon or right at the store.
Mike, you published the book yourself, right? How profitable is it to publish a book like this yourself?
I'm getting close for this one. It's very – can you see my mouth? It's very profitable. It is the way to go. And here's my secret. And I encourage anyone who's considering writing a book, do it and self-publish. So here's how I discovered it. I wanted to write a book that would sell a million copies. So the first thing is I got into the mindset – and this is, by the way, the strategy I share in the book – what is your grand vision? What's your dream? What's your 10-year plan? So I want to sell a million books. The first thing I did was I only interviewed authors that have sold a million books. So I did a TV show with Tim Ferriss and had lunch with him and just drilled him, you know, questions. Harv Eker I spoke with. Robert Kiyosaki I exchanged a couple emails with. Cameron Johnson, who had an amazing launch. I think he sold 75,000 books in the first 2 weeks of selling his book. It petered out subsequently, unfortunately, but he had a great launch. So I interviewed all these people, and I said, what would the one thing you would change if you could change anything? And they all said, I would not use a publisher, because a publisher changed my content, and I make about 50 cents a book. So I wouldn't do that again. I was self-published. So I said, okay, checks off self-published. But they said also, the challenge, though, is if you don't self-publish, is the distribution is a mother humping bear. So I said, okay, be ready for a mother humping bear. And distribution's been difficult, but we've got traction. The profitability, I can't share the exact details, but it's significantly more than using a publisher. Now, here's one little tip I also used. I am not self-published. I just started my own publishing company, Obsidian Launch Press. So I started my own publishing company, and the distributors started picking me up. So I'm on the shelves of Barnes & Nobles now. You know, I'm on Amazon. We're in negotiations with Borders through a distributor of ours. So all that stuff came about by asking the people that've been there, done it, asking what they didn't like about it, and what are the obstacles they faced and being prepared for it. It's been a battle in getting the distribution, but it's been very successful, very profitable, and I wouldn't change a thing.
You know what? I interview authors here all the time because I've got a friendship with people over at Portfolio, the publishing company, and they always have these great business books, so I interview their authors, and I always ask them, how much money are you making from the book? Is there any profit? And they say the exact opposite. As adamant as you are that it's profitable to self-publish, they are just as adamant that you can't make money publishing books. So you're the first person to tell me that there is. Are we talking about $250,000 off of this book? Can we say that?
Well, I can't. I'll show you. You could, if you do it right, you can make, if a book sells for, that book sells for $25, you can get 50% of that in bottom line profit after distribution, after expenses to print it and everything.
How many copies have you sold, give or take?
I can't share that, but let's just say this, it's well into the thousands, but it's not in the tens of thousands or more. Okay. But most people will expect, when it comes to a book, you must have sold 100,000 copies now. It's hard to sell a book. If you sell more than 5,000 copies, you've done an amazing job.
Hundreds we've of moved thousands more will shoot you right past the New York Times bestseller list. I mean, we're talking, it doesn't take that many to get to the New York Times bestseller list.
No, that's true.
Because people aren't buying that many books.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. And one thing that we're lucky is we're starting to experience a hockey stick explosion now. Most books launch hard and peter out. Our book launched soft and is growing now, which is an atypical approach, atypical marketing method. But we wanted to do it because we wanted it to be different. And so our sales is actually consistently increasing over time with that book, which is, you know, good.
All right. One of the reasons that you were able to do that is because you're on Donny Deutsch, right? Everybody loves Donny Deutsch, especially in our area.
Yeah.
How did you get on television so much?
Okay. So I'll tell you the trick of how to get on. And I'll give you the trick to how to stay on. Mm-hmm. I never do what everyone else does. It's the herd syndrome. You know, if the whole herd is running that way to get water, that my thumb's pointing that way, you got to run that way because the chances are you're not going to get any water that way. So with Donny Deutsch, everyone is sending him emails, soliciting him, sending him boxing, you know, here's my great stuff. Well, what I did was I called upon them simply to help them out. I loved the, I was a fan of the show, and I reached out and said, I don't want to be in your show necessarily or anything. I want to help you. And what they said is, oh, you know, we're looking to get a live audience. If you know entrepreneurs and can pack an audience, you know, tell us. I said, yeah. So I called, I got like 10 people in and helped pack the audience one day. Well, everyone else just brought themselves and their best friend. I was the only person that brought a group of people. So I instantly stood out with the person that booked or packed a room. And they said, could you do that again? I said, yeah, I'd love to. So I did a second time for him, and then I became the room packer, and they invited me to come out again. The third time, the internal staff said, who is this guy? How does he know all these entrepreneurs? What's he all about? So I shared my story, and then they called me, and I didn't know they were interviewing me. They called me, and they said, hey, we have a show concept. Can you help us with a show concept? So I said, yeah, here's some ideas I have. And then at the end of the call, they said, hey, just so you know, we were actually interviewing you. Love what you have to say. Can you be on the show tomorrow? Yeah, and I got on there. So that's how you get on. You got to do something. You got to be genuine. You got to go and help other people without an expectation for return. And that's what I did. Then when the opportunity presents itself, when serendipity comes your way, you got to grab it. You don't ignore it. So when it came that way, I made sure I was available. The second thing, though, is to stay on. Everyone else does. Everyone else is once they're on the show, they have the inside contacts, they start pumping and pumping and pumping. I sent thank yous, genuine thank yous. So appreciate being on the show. I sent them new show concepts saying, hey, if you ever have ideas about this, I can talk about that. But more importantly, I can also introduce you to other people to get on the show and so forth. I also went in very prepared. I was an easy guest. I went in there and I knew what I was going to talk about, and there was no training, no retakes, no nothing. And the final thing was by bringing in other guests, I actually got them a person. He's on TV once a week now. His name's Jerry Lynch. He's on CNBC all the time. I found them another guest who is exceptional, and they're eternally grateful for it. And they started going out of their way to help me. And by the way, I was so successful in this process of being genuine that's how I got my own reality show that we started filming last week.
How do you go from being genuine and helping Donny Deutsch out to ending up with your own TV show?
So, you know, once one opportunity presents itself, you got to grab it. You got to be relentless but respectful. And no one likes a nag. No one likes someone that's constantly in your face. But people do respect professional persistence. So when the opportunity presented itself to be on the show, I was on there frequently. I befriended the executive producer. I mean, and really became friends. And I kept on, his name was Will. I said, Will, if I can ever help you, if I ever can do anything for you, tell me. And he occasionally called me on it, and I helped him out. Which the show unfortunately came to an end. The executive producer, his name is Will, he had left by that point. Was taking another show to number one. He took Donny Deutsch's show to number one, and another producer took over. And we stayed in contact. Then he got to a point where he launched his own production company, and he was reaching out and said, hey, can you help me with launching a company? I said, yeah. I said, not only that, I'll give you office space for free. I'll get you all set up because I have the space here. Just come on over. Great. So he started coming here regularly. And then we just, after hours, we just kind of jawbone and talk. And he had an idea about a reality show, and we talked about it, collaborated. And next thing leads to the where we are today. He went out and pitched it. We got a bite, and we just got hired to do our first pilot, which we shot. And now, you know, we're hoping within 2 weeks when the pilot airs that we'll get the full series. That's how you do it.
I love it. I love hearing how business gets done. All right. Let's talk about some of your ideas from the Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. One of the ideas is you say that we should make failure very painful. Why should we make failure more painful than it already is?
Well, because you don't want to repeat it over and over. You know, hey, to make we all make mistakes. Everyone talks about it. It's okay to make mistakes. It's good to make mistakes. I agree. It's bad not to learn from your mistakes. And I don't know if you've ever done this, but if you've ever gone to a very warm stove and leaned your hand and kind of burned yourself, but it wasn't scalding, you may have done it again. You know, if you think about the hot cup of coffee you pick up and you're like, oh God, that's hot. You probably did that multiple times. But a scalding hot iron that when you put it on there, your finger singes and stuff and comes up, chances are you're very aware of that iron and you never, ever touch it again. So if your mistakes and your failures are like that hot cup of coffee, you're like, ah, and you keep on doing it, that's not painful enough. If your mistakes are as painful as the hot iron, you will be that will become ingrained in your mind and you'll be sure to avoid that in the future.
Okay, and how do I lead into this question that I know the answer to, but I want people to still hear the answer to? Why don't I just say it? I love one of your ideas, which is to give a friend $100 and tell him to keep you accountable, that if you don't finish a task, they get to keep that $100. And that's how you make it even harder for you to not do the task. How's that?
Okay, that was good. That was good.
That was so okay. Yeah, so. All right.
That was okay. I'll give you a B plus.
All right.
Well, here's one other thing. You know, give him a picture of you with your pants around your ankles. You know, do something where that, and make sure it's a trusted friend, by the way. But do something where they have the permission to burn you like that hot iron. That if you fail to deliver, you're done. Let me tell you how serious. Literally 45 minutes ago, I was on a phone call, an accountability phone call with a very, very connected person. And when I was talking with him, he was just recounting stuff that I need to do that I already know but I wasn't doing. Dude, I've been in business going on 17 years now, and I still need that accountability partner. I have to get him a report by the end of today with certain things or he's going to freaking kill me, and there's mechanisms for him to kill me. The biggest thing is just embarrassment of not delivering it. So I have an accountability partner, and it works. And I know my task list, which is written right here, I got pages and pages of stuff I got to bang out here, that this stuff is all going to be done by tonight, if it kills me, because I have an accountability partner.
Well,
and that's how
it works. I'm curious now. What's he going to do?
Well, he's doing me a major favor. So he's a very connected internet information marketer, which I've never had experience in that category. And so one thing is he's offering to help me out if I deliver this certain information by tonight. If not, he's dropping me and he's not going to help me out. And that's a big deal because this could represent a big opportunity for me to grow my exposure. The second thing is he won't promote my new reality show, and he's got a list of over 100,000 people. So I want that stuff.
All right, let's take some questions from people who are watching us live. Mark Makuta wants to know, what's the name of the reality show? Mark, he said it's called Bailout. Mark Makuta also wants to know, what's the network? Is there a URL? I guess Mark Makuta wants to help you promote the show.
Mark, you rock, baby. Show's called Bailout. And right now it's being distributed online, the pilot. It's through BBE and Hulu. So check those out. BBE is the producer. Hulu is one of the distribution platforms. Hulu's
so
backed by...
see it on Hulu.com and do a search for Bailout?
Yeah, do a search for Bailout. It's not up there yet. We just filmed the pilot. If you can, Mark, check our website, Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, regularly. We're going to be pumping the living shiite out of it when it goes live. And then hopefully, if we get enough traffic, then it spins up to NBC. And we'll be looking for guests. So, Mark, if you have a business, make sure you'll check. You'll see a form on our website. But submit your business if you think we could do the Bailout show with you.
All right, next question comes from AJ Kumar, who says he doesn't know if he missed it, but he wants to know, how did you market your book? We talked about it a little bit, but can you tell him a little bit more about how you marketed your book?
All right, So, okay, so this is totally secret. I swear, Andrew, you're the first to hear this. Again, I love to do out-of-the-box stuff. And when it came to launching a book, I wanted to do what no one else had done. So here's a deep, dark secret, and you guys can use this. One thing, I did a million different things, but one thing I'll share with you is when we had the books printed, I had some buddies stock them on the shelves of Barnes & Noble. We were signed up with them. And what the idea was, what they would be on the shelf, if someone tried to buy one, three things would happen. One is they go to the front desk and they try to buy it, and Barnes & Noble say, "What is this? We don't have it in stock." And there would be this confusion. Beautiful, good PR. Second thing is they allow the person to buy it, so they have the experience. The third thing is they would be not permitted to buy it, and there would be even more confusion because they'd have to call the manager and stuff like that. So that was one little trick we did to cause a very grassroots type of PR campaign. I did like 100 different things, and one day, probably in the next 6 months, I'm going to be doing a seminar about all the different – we did some amazing stuff that worked. But that's one of the little tricks that no one knows about. You're the first.
Wow, thanks. I love tricks like that. All right, so what did happen with that? You put this up on the shelves. Did you – which of those three things happened? Did they reject it? Did they let people buy it?
Well, interesting. So Barnes & Noble's, we never heard anything back. We did more than Barnes & Noble's. Barnes & Noble's heard nothing back. So I think they let the people buy it. So Barnes & Noble's, you made money off of me. And hopefully some people got great books. Walmart, we did a couple of Walmarts just like as a lark. Walmart made a stink. It wasn't in their inventory. So we got calls here saying, "Dude, I tried to buy your book at Walmart. What the F is going on?" There wasn't enough. We only did a couple of Walmarts initially. So there wasn't enough to do a PR campaign. We're going to call the newspapers and stuff and say, "Something's going on at Walmart. Our books are there. You know, what's going on?" But Walmarts with a couple books. So it was interesting, but it was a good learning lesson, and it set the precedent for us to do other stuff that did work very effectively.
All right, final question from the audience, then we go back to my notes. VoIP Samurai wants to know, how do you manage all these projects? Do you have assistants? Do you have a support team? I mean, we're hearing about television show appearances, toilet paper entrepreneur, the book, the website that needs updating. You're writing 66 points on this and that blog post. You're running Obsidian. How are you doing it all?
Yeah. So it's not the quantity of people you surround yourself with. It's the quality of people. So one guy, and Andrew, you know him, Scott Bradley, I surround myself with people that are way fucking smarter than me, first of all. And I surround myself – can I swear like that, by the way?
Do it.
All right. You should have said, fuck no, you can't do that. So, all right. I surround myself with people that are way smarter than me, first of all. And you got to – I got to recognize, and we all got to recognize, we're not that smart at many things, but we probably are very capable and very smart at one or two things. And those are things we got to exploit. So I'm very good at public speaking, and I'm very good at television interviews, if I'm prepared. But I'm not that good at social media at all. I don't really understand information marketing. I'm not good at other things. So for my information platform, I hired this guy, Scott Bradley. By the way, he's amazing. Watch him in the future. This guy is going places. The second thing, like that Will Surratt, who does the TV stuff, he gets video media and has helped us tremendously with all the videos we do. And there's other people behind the scenes too. But one thing also, and Scott's a perfect example of it, is I do not believe in hiring people with practical experience, hands-on experience. When people come on with experience, they come on with preconceived notions, in my belief. All I believe in is hiring people with the right attitude, energy, and intelligence. Then tell them and share constantly what the vision is. This is what we're trying to do, and this is how I want to do it. Now you, with your attitude, energy, intelligence, let's work together in finding and establishing a repeatable mechanism of doing it. Scott was a perfect example. He came out of college, out of quote-unquote nowhere. The guy is freaking dominating the web. Our website traffic points to it because he has the attitude, energy, intelligence, and because he didn't come with experience, he's bringing this kind of flexible mindset and developing a whole new platform that no one's seen before. So that's how I'm doing all these things. It's amazing people. It's very few amazing people. And it's amazing people with the right attitude, energy, and intelligence. Right, by the way, I try to keep myself out of the way because when I get in the way, I screw it all up.
How do we find Scott online? Does he have a Twitter page?
On Twitter, at Scott Bradley. He has his own website, Networking Effectively. He's an amazing guy. Now, he is a full-time colleague here at Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. So if you want his help, just give him another year or two. And I have a feeling enough longer. And this guy is going to be taking other authors to the next level.
All right. I want to talk about the prosperity plan, the quarterly plan. But how about this? If we could get two more people to Twitter that you and I are on live, will you give us another one of the tricks that you use to either promote your book or a clever trick that you use to promote your website? If we get two more people to Twitter that you're on here.
Yeah, or I'll give you a free book. You pick. Winner's choice. Book.
Let's say, let's not say either or. Let's be both. Let's do this.
Both.
Yes. Oh, and Scott Bradley is saying thank you to you. He's on live. If we get two people to say Toilet Paper Entrepreneur is on Mixergy right now, we'll give you a technique. I think information.
No, how about this? How I'll take one more level. I'll send you a book and the audio CD. You guys say Toilet Paper Entrepreneur is on with Andrew right now. Make sure there's the link in there. And word is he has no pants on.
Ah.
And that. Yeah, that'll get no one. We'll lose people on that one. And I actually don't have pants on. I'm sorry. I shouldn't show
that. All right. We will find out if he has. Mark Makuta, AJ Kumar, VoIP Samurai, just ask your question. You guys would be perfect candidates to tell people this. Tweet that out. Let's see if we could get anyone to tweet any of that out, and we'll find out a little bit more about Mike than most other interviewers would. All right, back to my notes. My note is the next one is about a prosperity plan. What's a prosperity plan?
So a prosperity plan is your vision, and I cannot emphasize how important this is. Business plan, you're wasting your freaking time. If you're doing a prosperity plan, which I give all the details in the book, but I'll tell you the overview, it's your 10-year vision. The reason it's 10 years, it's been statistically proven anyone can achieve anything within 10 years. You could be homeless today, and you could be a multimillionaire within 10 years. You could be the world-leading rocket scientist in 10 years. You have to have a crystal clear vision of where you're going. That's what a prosperity plan is.
All right, and it starts with a life mission, right?
Yeah, so there's different elements. Basically, what's your purpose? In this place, we were talking about passion earlier, Andrew. This plays into your passion. If you are not serving your passion, the person, your competitor that is, will kick your ass into Sunday. So, but if you're serving your passion and you do what you love, you will kick everyone else's ass into Sunday. So do what you love. That's your life mission.
Mike, a lot of self-help books and a lot of people in the space who try to teach you to be all that you can be say find what you love, what you're really passionate about. But in reality, isn't it more than that? Isn't it more than just finding about you? It's about finding finding an audience and a customer base and market and what they're looking for. I mean, where does this become practical?
Yeah. So it all starts with, I would argue it all starts with you. And it's all about you for most of the distance. Because, you know, you got to do what you love. You got to be exploring your strengths. You got to be sharing your values and what you stand for and what you mean. You got to be you 100% of the way. Step though, Andrew, is once you're you 100%, the customers that will resonate with it will be just like you. So when I built Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, we launched this now 7 or 8 months ago. You know, I'm brand new to the scene, but we have, I think our best month, we had 70,000 unique visitors to our site. A typical month now is about 40,000 new visitors coming to our site. And I can't tell you how many emails I get. But the reason is because all those people are me. I mean, they're not me, but they're just like me. They share my values. They share the vision. They understand what it means to be a scrapper and want an advocate for it. So the key is you have to be all about you 100% and be true to yourself 100% and then recognize that the customer base is going to be just like that. It actually was interesting. Gandhi said this. Gandhi said he always tells the truth. He always is himself 100%. Therefore, whenever he forgets something, he just tells the truth and he'll never be mistaken. And that's the lesson we all need to learn.
I can't believe we didn't get anyone to tweet this out. Mike Makuta, you still watching?
No pants.
No pants.
No pants. No pants.
I'm still not sure that I buy it because you know what? I ran an online greeting card company. It did really well because it pursued a market that most people who are internet entrepreneurs didn't care about. It went after an audience of older people, mostly women, mostly housewives. Because most of us who are building internet companies can't even identify with that. We're not building companies for that audience. And that's a huge market with lots of money, with lots of potential for growth. And I only pursued it because that's where the money was. If I was pursuing what I really was passionate about, I don't know that there was as much money there. Or at least if I was pursuing my own audience, people who are like me, I don't think there'd be as much money there because everyone else is pursuing them because you're doing it because everyone in their 20s is building a business for them.
Right. So here would be my counterpoint. If you start a business and it's doing well and you're not passionate about it, when someone steps into that market and they are passionate about it, they will kick your ass. The second thing is, if you are, it's not the exact same person. Like the people that follow Toilet Paper Entrepreneur and Obsidian aren't, you know, unshaven guys like me that are 37. It's actually mostly women that are 35 to 50. But there is an element about what I do that resonates 100%. So you're not going to get these clone troopers following you, but you are going to get people that resonate to their core with certain parts about what you're about. So potentially with your card company, you hit a part of you that was truly congruent with that demographic, but maybe they shared the exact same psychographic as you.
Okay. All right, values. I love this in the book. You say you need to know what your values are, but don't come up with these boring, we're risk takers, we're independent, we're honest values. You say come up with something that's got a little more bite to it. And you give it the example of one of your portfolio companies, Hedgehog Leather, with no dry humping. Another company, you give the example of no dicks allowed. What are your values at your company?
Yeah, so let me tell you, first of all, the reason I do that is they got to be visceral. So, you know, our purpose is to serve our customer base. That blows. That's not real. And if it's not visceral, you're never going to be able to use it as a filter for your company. But if you have a filter that really applies to you, it will work. The no dicks allowed, by the way, that's my company's value. And the reason values are so important is that when I hire people, basically I have interviewed and continue to interview my people on those parameters. Are there no dicks allowed? Are they give to givers? That's another value of ours. Are they all about blood money? Another value. Are they positivity or death? I mean, are they positive people or they recognize if they're pessimistic, game's over? Those are our four values. And that filter applies to hiring colleagues. It applies to vendors. I will not work with vendors that don't have this positive positioning. I will not work with vendors that are dicks. I won't work with vendors that don't respect money like it's blood as opposed to like they're peeing it away. So it applies to the products I introduce. It applies to services I do. The values becomes a filter for everything you do. And it has, because then the people, when they hear it, either those exact words or when they feel it, when they come to your office, they're going to either be repulsed by it, they're not a fit, or they're going to be attracted to it, means they're a perfect fit. So it becomes a very quick way of filtering people in and out of the business.
All right. Let's see. If anyone has any questions, please ask them now. Mike, out of everything that we talked about, everything that you're trying to communicate out there, if we could leave people with one message, what would that message be? What's the most powerful thing that we could send them away with?
The most powerful thing is action. It all boils down to action, and take action now. So I actually say this in a lot of my presentations. When I wrap up, inevitably one person, something is tweaked in their mind. They say, oh, I can do that book thing, right? So you know this great technique. Or, oh, wow, I should write a prosperity plan, or whatever resonated with you. Unfortunately, most people say, well, I'm going to hop on it at the end of the day. But by the end of today, we've returned to our normal routine and nothing gets done. And by tomorrow, you've forgotten what's discussed. The key to success is when something resonates with your gut, when you feel that internal emotion saying, oh, that sounds good, you have to go for it immediately and irrevocably. I mean, you got to go for it and you got to keep going until the momentum is building itself. So that's the one thing. I don't care what it was just now or if something happened earlier today or something happened later today. But the second you feel in your gut that's the right thing, jump on it. Schedule the meeting. Make that phone call. Write it down and commit to it. Appointment to get it done. Turn off the email and start tackling that. Do not return to the routine. That's the killer of all of us. Take action now to succeed.
All right. Let's leave it there. Thank you for doing this interview with me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Andrew. Thanks. I appreciate it.
All right, and there's the program. Now that it's over, as always, I'm going to ask you for your feedback. Come back to Mixergy. Find any number of ways to give me your feedback. Number two, add your comments to this post. What I am finding is that people who add their comments to the post get connected to other people who are watching Mixergy, get a whole community of discussion built around their ideas, and I'm also starting to see that past and future interviewees are looking on Mixergy and starting to interact with the people who are leaving comments on the post.
All right. Third, get the book, Toilet Paper Entrepreneur. It's available at Barnes & Noble, at Amazon, and if he happens to have been at your Walmart, it might be on the shelves over there. Finally, click around Mixergy.com. I've done tons of interviews with entrepreneurs who can teach you what they learned in their experience from their lives building their companies. They're all here to teach you. Click around Mixergy. Go ahead and download them all and give me your feedback on them all. I'm Andrew Warner. Thank you for watching. I'll see you in the comments.